AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Brett Johnson back in, filling in for Matt McNeil here on this Monday afternoon. We're joined by Kevin Featherly. He is the Capitol reporter from Minnesota Lawyer, as we're going to be talking about last week's sexual assault case that came before the state Supreme Court that will have, well, could potentially have a major impact on other sexual assault cases in Minnesota. Basically, what the court ruled last week is that a person who is sexually assaulted while intoxicated does not fit the designation for a more serious charge if he or she consumed the alcohol or drugs voluntarily. Again, that was according to the Minnesota Supreme Court ruling, as we'll be talking about that coming up in the interview with Kevin. But first, do want to welcome Kevin back to the show. Thanks for coming on today.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, and actually, before we get into the Supreme Court case, I do briefly want to talk about the Chauvin trial. Nothing really specifically, since we are recording this ahead of time, but I know you're someone who often follows court cases around Minnesota as part of your job. And from the sounds of it, this is pretty unusual to actually have a trial like this live streamed at the district court level, correct?
Yeah, it's very unusual. I don't know that it's unprecedented. It may be unprecedented in the sense that it's live streaming over the internet. I don't know if there's never been a trial, you know, televised live in Minnesota, but it is extremely rare, particularly at the district court level, where they're very strict about access.
Yeah, and you were saying it's not unusual at the appellate court level or the state Supreme Court level to have those trials streamed, but at the district level, they are very, very strict about it. Even having a recording device in there could potentially get you in some hot water, it sounds like.
Oh, yes. You've got to go through some pretty sensitive negotiations to bring a camera in the courtroom or a recording device. But there are reasons for that. The reason that the appellate court is less strict about that is because they don't have juries present. They don't have witnesses present. You know, nobody's going to be identified to, let's use the extreme case, to a gang member and, you know, put at risk at the appellate court level, because you really only have attorneys and the justices or the judges on the panel present. That's a different situation than the district court.
Yeah, so at least having this Chauvin trial, yeah, it does offer Minnesotans an opportunity to see this trial happening as it does, since in normal times, I imagine, we might not have access to this. So if you have the chance, you definitely... go ahead, Kevin. Yeah.
Sorry. The camera angles are very tightly controlled. The jurors are not going to be placed on the screen. I imagine when we get to witnesses, however, when they're testifying, they will be speaking to us all.
In fact, as I've already seen some of it, yeah, they do have direct video of those witnesses, so they are on there. But as you said, yeah, very unlikely they would show any of the jurors on camera, since that would definitely cause some major issues. All right, Kevin, so I want to move on to this case that happened last week at the state Supreme Court that has to do with sexual assault, where, again, the Supreme Court basically ruled in Minnesota is that if someone is assaulted while intoxicated, if the alcohol was consumed voluntarily, it doesn't necessarily fit the definition of rape. Now, I want to go to the background of this case, where it stems from. This has to do with a guy by the name of Francois, I apologize if I'm getting the name wrong, Mamalou Khalil, who was a Minneapolis man who was convicted of third-degree sexual assault because the victim was drunk and considered by the jury to be mentally incapacitated. So this would look like the type of case where, oh yeah, she was intoxicated, therefore this should be a rape case, but that's not exactly what the Supreme Court ruled. So, Kevin, let's talk about what the court ruled in this case with Khalil, because as the justices were reading through the statute, they said the plain text of the statute does not necessarily mean that the definition of being willfully intoxicated means that that can be sexual assault. Do I kind of have that right?
Yeah, in fact, what they found is that there's clear meaning in the statute as written that says that in order for mental incapacitation to take place, that person has to be administered, the substance, the anesthetic, the narcotic, alcohol, whatever it might be, has to be administered to that person without the person's agreement. And then that would then constitute lacking the judgment to give reasoned consent for sexual conduct. So what they found is that the legislature intended for that to be the case. And that appears to be true, because I've done the research a little bit on it and looked at the original statute from, I forget when the year it was, I think it was 1975. And that phrase is there at the beginning from that very first statute. And I talked to Kelly Mahler today, the representative who has a bill we'll probably talk about a little bit later. She said that actually that language goes all the way back to the 1880s. And if you think about it, this is what she and I talked about, that language is sort of, I'm about to use a colloquial phrase that I hope you'll forgive me for, but it sort of speaks of the idea of shaming, doesn't it? Because what we're saying here is that if you, it's okay if you've been administered the substance and you weren't in agreement with it, but if you took this on your own, well, hey, that's kind of what the statute says.
Yeah,
and that's what the court ruled. They said we were hamstrung here. We can't find that this statute says something other than what it says.
Yeah, it's essentially blaming the victim. And as you said, that's what the justices were going by, is just the letter of the definition in the statute. Because I do believe they said, well, technically, Khalil could be charged with fifth degree criminal assault, which would have a much, much lesser punishment as compared to the possible rape conviction that Khalil was going to be facing. And basically, the judges were saying, we're hamstrung by the definition of this statute. We're not necessarily saying that this guy is innocent by any means, but the way that the statute is written, we're hamstrung, and that's up to the state legislature to make those changes.
They also found that the judge's instructions were in error, and they found that because there was a way for him to be convicted on the charge that they were going for, because there are two different areas. There's both mental incapacitation and there's the component of physical helplessness. And in this case, that's why this is going back for retrial, by the way. This wasn't just simply overturned. This is going back for retrial. That guilty verdict could have been rendered basically on physical helplessness. But the problem was that the way the judge gave the instruction was problematic because the jury could read it two different ways. It could be read to say, and we talked about this a little while ago about the missing comma, it could be read to say that this is only true if a foreign, some other substance other than alcohol or an anesthetic is administered, and this is what the jury asked. What does this mean? Does this mean that this other substance is the problem, that's the only one, that if it's administered by someone else, the penalty applies, or is it this whole thing? And the judge wound up saying, well, no, your first interpretation is the right one. Well, the court found, no, it's not, because you can't say, you again, by doing it this way, you're kind of writing out of law what is in the statute. I doubt I'm putting this across very clearly, but this is legalese for you.
Yeah, if you have an error like that, obviously it seems like it can cause some problem, or not necessarily an error, but the way that the judge's instructions were given were not correct. And yeah, that can certainly cause some problems in a courtroom, as I imagine.
Yeah, and I'll explain to you how that works. So here's what the judge said. A person is mentally incapacitated if she lacks the judgment to give reasoned consent to sexual penetration due to the influence of alcohol, a narcotic, or other substances administered without her agreement. Well, oops, there's supposed to be a comma after the word substance in that phrase. And without it, then the other substances and administered. And without that, it sounds like you're only isolating to that last phrase, and the others, she could have taken this substance. She could have drunk the alcohol. She could have done any of these other things on her own, but this other substance, it would have to be administered by the other person. And what the judge then was essentially telling the jury is that, no, the law says that if she drank the alcohol on her own, she's still mentally incapacitated, and that qualifies for conviction on this charge. And then they did convict. But the court says, and by the way, the Court of Appeals upheld that. But the Supreme Court says, no, because that's not how the statute is written.
So I know a lot of people are concerned about this ruling and some of the possible impacts it could have on other sexual assault cases in Minnesota. Could this ruling have some major impacts in terms of how other cases have been decided with sexual assault and rape?
Potentially, although I think what will more likely result from this, and that's separate from any legislative change, which I think is, you know, a good possibility, I think that there would be some more clarity in the judge's instructions going forward. I think likely that would happen, because the thing that the court found is that there could have been a conviction on the physical helplessness. The only problem is that when you get to the appellate level, that panel is no longer a fact-finding panel. So justices can't poll the jury. They can't ask the jury, what were you thinking? You're beyond that when you get to the appellate level. All they can go by is the record. And there is a record of what the jury asked the judge. There's a record of what the judge responded, but there's absolutely no record whatsoever of the deliberations. And because of that, and because it's not clear whether the jury decided based on this erroneous instruction, or if they decided, as it could have been, rightly on physical helplessness, they just don't know. And so this has to go back for trial. So I can understand why people are concerned about it. I wouldn't share as deep a concern, because I think, you know, there's a pretty clear way around this in terms of jury instructions and certainly in the way that you charge these crimes. But we could also talk a little bit about the legislative response to this.
Yeah, I do want to get to that in just 1 second, but do just want to quickly clarify. So what's going to happen next in this case of Khalil, so he is going to be getting a new trial by the sounds of it, correct?
Yeah, this is being remanded to the district court.
So it'll, yeah, essentially be starting from square one. So he's not necessarily found not guilty or anything. He just gets a new trial is what's happening.
Right, right. And gotcha. And that is, you know, too bad. Well, that's sort of a almost dismissive way of putting it. It's very sad that this victim has to go through this again.
Gotcha. I'll edit out that little part there. Yeah, gotcha.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kevin, let's talk about what's happening now at the state legislature, because Representative Kelly Moeller, she is a DFLer, is trying to put a clear definition in the Minnesota laws that does make it a felony to have sex with someone who is too intoxicated to give consent, regardless of how they got this way, or how they got that way, rather. And you had a chance to speak with Kelly Moeller, I believe, a little bit about this bill, if you could talk about that.
Yeah, before I even get to that, I want to go back to the ruling just for a second, because one of the most remarkable things about it is it actually quotes Representative Moeller's bill. It actually references it by name, HF 707, and says, you know, essentially suggests this is the way out of this mess. You know, it's almost this is not what he's doing, but it's almost as though Justice Thiessen, who is a former Speaker of the House, by the way, is standing with a bullhorn on the Capitol lawn saying, pass this bill. You know? Mm-hmm. It's almost like that. And her legislation is actually, there are many, many components to it. It's like a 14-part bill, and it has a lot of different moving parts to it. But one of the things it would do is remove this idea that for somebody to be mentally incapacitated as a result of an intoxicant, it has to be somehow secretly administered to that person. So if somebody gets drunk, if somebody does, as the victim in this case apparently did, according to the trial record, drank and ingested a narcotic pill of some kind, that's not going to get you off the hook. It doesn't matter who or where it came from. Mental incapacitation as a result of intoxication is mental incapacitation and can be the element of a felony crime.
So where does that bill currently stand in the state House of Representatives? I believe it just passed the House Public Safety Committee unanimously, and now it looks like it's going to be moving on to some other committees.
Yeah, it goes to Ways and Means. So that's its, you know, ostensibly could be its last stop, although sometimes Ways and Means will take a look and say, there's a problem here. We need you to send this back to committee and just fix this. But it is going to Ways and Means. Not so much movement in the Senate at this point. Senator Senjum has this bill, and it's been referred to the Senate Judiciary Committee. But as is sort of a common theme, it's one of the many bills that hasn't had a hearing, and it's not scheduled for one. That doesn't mean it won't have a hearing and that it's not going to end up being heard, but right now there's nothing on the calendar. Of course, the legislature's off for this week, so there are no legislative committee hearings this week at all. But what's also likely is that this bill is going to get rolled up into some sort of, I would guess, into some kind of an omnibus package. So it might wind up being hammered out in conference committee, even if it's never heard in Senate, although frequently those bills don't survive. But it might have a chance, even if it's not heard in Senate, that because it'd be rolled up into a larger omnibus, they still may have to reckon with it.
And I imagine there has to be some urgency behind this bill now, too, given the recent court ruling, well, and the fact, too, that this thing got out of the Public Safety Committee on a unanimous vote. So it seems like there is broad agreement between Republicans and Democrats that something has to be changed with this statute.
True enough, but we have seen instances, for instance, with the DWI bill, a package of bills, that had broad agreement in the House, bipartisan agreement, but Senator Limmer, for reasons that are confounding to Senator Ron Lapps, who watched that bill pass, hasn't heard it, and it's sort of dismissive of the idea that it had bipartisan support in the House because, after all, it's the House. It's irrelevant to us. That's sort of how he treated that. But Senator Limmer pays attention to what the courts have to say, and I wouldn't be surprised if he finds a way to get this bill heard, because there is obviously impetus from the court. They've told the legislature exactly what they can do to avoid this really sort of tragic consequence. You know, the fact that this woman has to go back and deal with this all over again.
Yeah, that is the saddest part of this thing, is that this woman who was the victim of sexual assault has to go back through that entire trial again. So hopefully we do end up getting some action from both the House and especially the Senate side so we can get something put into law. So yeah, hopefully we never run into this situation again. Because as you said, just looking at the human element, that's very traumatic to make someone go through that trial twice. So yeah, hopefully something can end up getting passed in the state legislature. Hey, that's
one thing that might speak to her. One thing that might speak, you know, to that, if a bill passes and it passes because of her experience, I've seen where some folks have found that to be sort of justice enough. It may not be what they were seeking, but the fact that legislation passed as a result of their experience and that other people won't have to go through it is something that some people find it,
Well, hopefully we'll have some action on that bill in the next few weeks over at the state legislature. That is Kevin Featherly. He is the Capitol reporter for Minnesota Lawyer. Great resource to follow along with what's happening at the state legislature. Again, make sure you give Kevin a follow on Twitter over at Kevin Featherly, or go to Minnesota Lawyer as well. Hey, Kevin, really appreciate the time today.
Thank you.
All right, let's take a break. And when we come back, we'll be joined by Frank Brown of Minuteman Press Uptown. Minuteman Press Uptown was the company that helped us print our AM 950 official calendars. And we'll be chatting with Frank about his business coming up next here on AM 950.